Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, March the 21st. Well, what a day. I mean, it's kind of muggy and warm here in the Dallas area, but what a day for news. We've got three major topics we're going to get into today. This bizarre, I mean, just completely bizarre story about the FBI putting someone in the Trump campaign. It's just absolutely incredible. The Democrats and versus President Trump, this is an interesting case for me, and I have a post about this coming out tomorrow morning where I dwell a little bit into how this whole thing has really backfired on the people who started the investigation. But I want to begin with an ongoing story. This is that air crash in Cuba. I have a post about this at the American Thinker today, and my friends over at Babalu continue to do great work providing updates as much as possible on the story. Look, airplane crashes are unfortunately a reality of life, and they happen. So I don't want to exaggerate the point. But in this particular case, what makes this even more tragic is that the aircraft itself probably should not have been flying. I don't think that most airlines in the world would have used that particular aircraft. The background of the story, as we discussed in my post this morning, as well as some follow-up information, like I say, that you've seen over at Babalu and elsewhere. The background of the story is that Cuba, like most countries, has an airline. Now, the Cuban Airlines, the company, I should say, used to be a private company before Castro, and it was actually one of the most elegant and best of the commercial airlines in Latin America. I think it was associated with Pan American. I'm not sure, or Pan Am, as it was called back then. But anyway, it was a very, very good airline. It did a lot of travel between the United States and Mexico, Cuba and the United States, Cuba and Mexico. I think there were even maybe some flights to London. But it was a very well-known and respected airline. When Cuba became a communist country, a lot of those planes that Cubana was using, they decided to switch for Soviet airplanes. And for a while there, you could see the Soviet planes, the Russian planes, other planes from some other Soviet countries were being used. In fact, I had an experience, personal experience with this. I was at the Mexico City airport one day, and I saw this really unusual-looking aircraft. It was like a combination of a 727 and an old DC-9. And I looked at this thing. I couldn't figure out the plane until I saw that it was Cubana Airlines. And then, you know, I concluded that it must have been a Russian aircraft. Anyway, once you had the collapse of the Soviet Union, once you've had the collapse of the Cuban economy, you have a perfect storm. You can no longer get parts because many of these aircrafts, are just no longer available, and you cannot get parts from them. And then on top of that, Cuba doesn't have the cash. Nobody will give Cuba credit because it doesn't pay its debts. So Cuba has been forced to basically ground a lot of its jets. So to make up for this, they have been leasing aircraft from other countries. This particular aircraft, Boeing 737 that went down in Havana, this was an aircraft owned by a Mexican company, not one of the major airlines, but just a private Mexican company that they leased the aircraft from. Now, the 737 is actually a very good aircraft, as I'm sure many of you have flown here in the United States. Southwest Airlines has a bunch of them. They're very reliable and good planes. But this one obviously was too old, and who knows what the maintenance was. The bottom line is that this is a plane that should have never been flying. This is a plane that should have been just sold or just torn apart, as many of these airplanes are, and they sell the parts or whatever. This is not a plane that should have been used. So you now have this airplane, 100 people are dead, and this has become an international story because there were many foreigners in that plane. There were some Mexicans, there were some, I believe, a person from Argentina. I don't think there was anybody from the United States, but nevertheless, this was a plane that should have never, under no circumstances, should have ever been put to use flying passengers. And, you know, the Cuban government, of course, is reacting, and they're not accustomed to this kind of a story. They're not accustomed to basically losing control of a story. Normally, they control the story because they've got the media, and they've got the government, and they've got everything under control. This is one of those stories they cannot control because, obviously, you've got other countries involved, and you've got 100 people dead. So it's just an absolutely terrible study. I think that my guess is that this is going to have a very serious impact on tourism in Cuba, because if this airplane is in bad shape, what about the others? I mean, it's just going to have a devastating impact on domestic flights within Cuba. Remember, we're talking here about a domestic flight. We're not talking about a plane that was coming from the United States or Mexico or whatever. These are strictly domestic flights within Cuba. But it was just a devastating story. And I think that this is one of those incidents that has consequences for the regime. We all remember what happened in 1972 when you had the earthquake in Nicaragua. That earthquake was devastating. 10,000 people dead, hundreds of villages were just wiped out. But the biggest impact may have been that it really exposed a lot of the corruption, a lot of the inefficiencies in the Somoza regime, and in many ways almost accelerated the collapse of that regime. Then you had the situation in Mexico in 1985, the September earthquake, that was in so many ways became almost a testament to Mexican corruption. I mean, the number of buildings that came down because of corrupt people who were checking these buildings and never really doing the job they were supposed to be doing. All these new buildings that were collapsing and people saying, wait a minute, I thought these buildings were constructed to take an earthquake. Yeah, they probably were, but they have to be maintained. Obviously, they were not. And then you have, of course, Chernobyl in Russia, the Soviet Union, I should say, in 1986, when that whole incident exposed just horrible upkeep and maintenance at that nuclear plant. So these incidents have a way of being bigger than the regime. And I think this air crash is going to be remembered someday as in many ways the turning point in the collapse of this regime. I know we've talked about this before, about the turning point and the day that it begins or the end begins. I think this is going to be remembered as the day that it all began to fall apart because they cannot control the story anymore. This is no longer something they can control. In the past, an event like this, they would have been able to cover it up. They would have managed the information, and nobody would have found out. They can't do that anymore. They simply cannot do that anymore. And I think the entire world is learning what an absolute corrupt system Cuba has. And I think it's going to hurt the regime a great deal. A new president, Díaz-Canel, this is a terrible challenge for him, especially a man who's brand new and probably doesn't have a lot of support in the Communist Party, because the Communist Party is still very much pro-Castro. So we're going to see. We're going to see what happens. But it's not going to be pretty for Cuba over the next few months. This is going to be very ugly, and the consequences are going to be very ugly for the Communist Party in Cuba. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes. We'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpist. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' schedule on the show information right under show description. You see where it says Carlos' schedule. Click on that, and it'll take you to his website, his entire schedule. A couple of things from on this day in history. We'll start at the very beginning. Raymond Burr, the man who became known as Perry Mason. Well, that's how I remember him. He was born on this day. Pardon me. He was born on this day in 1917. Perry Mason, that's what I remember. 1927, Charles Lindbergh landed in Paris. This was the day that he landed in Paris. Amazing. I still to me, that is such an amazing achievement. He flew 59 hours straight without sleep. I don't know how he did it. Amazing. Amazing discipline. 1881, I guess we didn't go back far enough before, but 1881, a lady by the name of Clara Burton began the American Red Cross. And in 1955, Chuck Berry, one of the giants of rock and roll, recorded Maybelline, one of the great early rock songs. Amazing thing about this song is, this is a year before Elvis. I mean, Elvis was playing at that time, but he was not the international star that he was. I mean, this is a year before Elvis, and Chuck Berry was already out there recording some of the great songs. Maybelline, one of the best rock and roll songs of all time. Well, let's get back to the politics. I have a post coming out tomorrow about the Democrats and President Trump. I wonder how many of you remember, right after the election, there was a press conference, President-elect Trump, his first press conference, his first interviews with people of the press, as President-elect, that is. And there was a press conference, and they were asking President-elect Trump, what are you going to do? I mean, lock her up? I mean, are you going to go after Hillary like you promised? And I thought, to his credit, President Trump or President-elect Trump sort of sat back and said, you know what? Probably not. I mean, she's already been hurt by the loss, and there's no need to pile on. Basically, he said, let it go. Let it go, and let us worry about the future. And I was watching that, and I said, that is really a smart move on President-elect Trump's part. I said, that's really smart, President-elect, because you're sort of showing the high road here. You're acting like a real statesman rather than someone who wants to go back and settle scores. And I thought it was a great move. And I thought the Democrats would react by saying, okay, let's forget about the past and let's deal with the future. But unfortunately, they were so angry at that election that they basically declared war on President Trump. And we've been living it for the last year and almost year and a half. And, you know, the Russia scandal, this investigation, that investigation, Stormy Daniels. But it all seems to have fallen apart for the Democrats. And right now, it looks to me more and more and more that as new information comes out, it will be the Democrats who are going to be hurt. There's going to be an FBI report that I don't think is going to make Mr. Comey look very good. There was another one that came out before that is not going to make or did not make Mr. McCabe, who was the number two, look very good. And there's another one coming out on the Clinton Foundation. And I think it's kind of ironic that all of this is coming out, because the only reason this is all coming out is because we started to investigate President Trump. I think that if the Russia thing had never been started, had a lot of these other attacks on President Trump had never been started, I think a lot of these other issues like emails and stuff like that would have gone away on their own. And we wouldn't be talking about the Clinton Foundation. We wouldn't be talking about Clinton emails. It would have just kind of all gone away. So the reason it's back, the reason we're talking about these things, is because when they went after President Trump, they exposed their own weaknesses, Comey, Mrs. Clinton, and so on. So I just think it's fascinating. And this latest one on the FBI and Trump, I mean, this is bizarre. I mean, this is beyond anything that I could have imagined. Now they're saying, well, we were trying to protect President Trump, you know, from Russian interest in his campaign or whatever. Well, look, if you're interested in protecting the integrity of American elections, and I can certainly understand that, if you're interested in protecting the integrity of American elections, then you put somebody in both campaigns. You basically call in the two candidates and say, look, this is a confidential meeting, but we believe that the Russians are trying to infiltrate your campaign, so we're going to put people in both campaigns. We just want you to know about this. And you kind of keep it like that. But clearly, the fact that they only put people in President Trump's campaign, that's what gives rise to the politicization of the FBI and gives rise, I think, to a lot of suspicion on the part of people like me that this was not about protecting the integrity of our electoral system. This is about was really about going after President Trump, or at the time, candidate Trump. So it's just bizarre to me how this is where we've come from That first press conference right after the election, when President-elect Trump said, no, we're not going to go after Hillary. Let's just kind of forget about it and let me govern. And I think had the Democrats picked, basically accepted that, he was like, it's like a ceasefire. The President Trump was almost like issuing a ceasefire. Had the Democrats accepted that and basically focused on politics or issues instead of this hysterical attack every single day, the resistance and all of that on President Trump, had they actually concentrated on issues, I think they'd be a heck of a lot better off today. But their obsession with destroying Trump, I think, has done a lot to hurt them. And right now there's a backlash against the Democrats. I think there's clearly a backlash against the media. And that, that big blue wave that was supposed to come this year, that seems less and less likely. I'm not saying the Democrats are not going to pick up the House. They may. But I don't think, I'm not as confident of that as maybe I was 6 months ago. I think more and more starting to look to me that there may be a Republican wave, in the sense that you're going to see a very heavy Republican turnout. You've seen it in some of these primaries where the Republican turnout has been very heavy in primaries. And I think it's all starting to look to me like November is going to be payback time, but not against Trump, actually on behalf of Trump, against the media and some of the Democrats. And all of this could have been avoided. The Democrats could have avoided all of this if they had simply taken up President-elect Trump's message right after the election, when he said, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to go after her. Let's just look ahead. Had they accepted that from President Trump and looked ahead, they'd be a heck of a lot better off today than they are. You know, it's the old story about be careful what you wish for because you may get it. Well, the Democrats are getting it, and it's all basically coming back to them. They're the ones now who I think are going to be facing litigation and criminal challenges. It's just fascinating. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Muggy and warm Dallas, but we kind of like it that way as Memorial Day comes around. Bye-bye, everybody.